I've seen people move other people's pieces for them in that kind of game. It's like, no. And
that's fine if you all agree to it, but...
Yeah. But still, that's a massive breach of etiquette.
Yes, hugely, hugely.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm.
Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers, and today we're talking about board games, and I am tactically excited to be joined by Anil, Ian and Navy. As always, we shall introduce ourselves alphabetically. So, Anil, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hi, this is Anil, he, him. I am Rusty Quill's chief compliance officer. I'm the one who keeps us safe, keeps us on the straight and narrow. I've got a nebulous job description.
Oh, we should clarify, that's in a health and safety capacity. Anil is not
health
of security.
Health and safety, legals, that sort of thing.
Lovely to have you back on the show.
It's lovely to be back.
Next up, Ian, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hi, I'm Ian. My pronouns are he, him, they. I'm an actor, improviser. I teach people to act as well, which is madness, let's face it. I was also Trevor Herbert in the Magnus Archives, so I think I was probably the best avatar of a power that they had.
Yes, I think that's agreed by all.
Certainly the cuddliest, definitely.
Yes.
Cuddly in inverted commas? Or
yeah, a little bit knifey, but, you know, still.
Yeah. Who wasn't on the Magnus Archives?
Yeah, pretty much all
What's
of them,
a little stabbing amongst friends?
Exactly.
Actually, Aaron wasn't. Actually, no, he got his stabs in with his words.
Yeah.
Ah, verbal stabbing. And finally, Navy, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hi, I am Navy. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a tech support assistant at Rusty Quill.
Yay! Oh, I should also, since I welcomed Anil back, welcome back Ian and Navy as well. You have also been on here before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time.
Ooh.
Yes. I have recorded with you before, but it was a lost episode that may never be heard.
Yes, you were in the secret episode that we had to get rid of. Well, let's get into it. Please hearken back to the days of yore. Tell me, what is the first board game you remember playing? Because for me, I think it was Ludo. Really old school one, which I can't remember much about, except that it had like four different colours and was kind of spirally looking.
It's known by a bunch of names. I think it's more commonly known in the US as Parcheesi.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it's... Yeah.
Yes.
I spent so long wondering what Parcheesi is.
Yes. No, it's Ludo.
Ah.
Which, you know, weirdly enough, one of the simplest games, I mean, etymology of its name, Ludo, I play.
Oh.
It's Latin. But yeah, no, I...
Well, like Lego, because Lego is we play. Mm. So yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Weird enough, actually, you saying Ludo, yeah, that probably would be, for me, like, I'd completely forgotten about that. But I remember playing one of the versions here in the UK where you've got a popper in the middle of the board that rolls the dice. Like, you push down on this this plastic dome. It rolls the dice, and then you move rather than you rolling the dice by hand.
Yes, I remember that. I had a game that did that, and it was the most fun part of the game.
Yeah, definitely.
Just slamming it.
But for me, like, games I played as a young'un would probably be those simple, very early kids' games, Ludo. I mean, in inverted commas, Snakes and Ladders, but like we all know, that's not technically a game.
What?
Well, you've got no choices in it.
There's no choice, there's no skill. It's literally a roll of the die and you move the board. There is nothing, there are no mechanics, there are no, well, I mean, there are the boardroom, there is literally only one path.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so that sounds like Anil's Snakes and Ladders was the first, in quotation marks, game that you played.
But like, so things like chess, Cluedo, those sorts of things were early, early board games for me.
Do you know, I've never played Cluedo.
Oh, it's really good. It's a very straightforward design. Mm-hmm. And if you like mysteries and figuring things out, it's actually a very solid game.
Yeah. Aww. Navy, how about you? What was the first game that you played?
I was trying to think. I think the first games I would have played besides, you know, like chess and checkers would have been more family games like Sorry or Trouble. Because that's the kind of stuff that like summer camps would have laying around.
What's Sorry?
So Sorry, I actually get these two mixed up in my head all the time.
Okay.
And I found that a good amount of people also do. Sorry is the one with there's these little pegs as pieces, and you go around the board and you use cards. Like everyone has like a deck of cards that they draw from that gives you your moves and things. The goal is just to get all the way around the board, but you're able to like to push people back and mess with their ability to move around the board, and it's pretty simple, a lot of fun. And then Trouble is the one that has the popper in the middle. And it's just you're trying to get around the board and the dice is rolling, and that's really it. I don't remember. I seem to remember there was also a way in Trouble that you could knock back opponents' pieces, but I don't remember. That would have been 20 years ago at this point.
Good grief.
But yeah, the first like real actual board games I started playing, I guess I'll talk about later, but
okay.
But those were the first like simple, you know, family games that I played.
And what about you, Ian?
I mean, I've got Sorry down as well. Sorry's quite old. So I played it. It had pleasingly round cards, my version.
Yeah.
Which was just, you know.
I actually also remember that.
But that's Ludo. Sorry is Ludo, but with cards or Parcheesi.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the same game pretty much. And it is fantastic. Yeah.
Oh yeah, even the boards look like real.
Yeah, it's just another Parcheesi variant, and there's a lovely way that you can play it with taking on more than one card, which again, as Anil said, gives you more choice. So if you have three cards in your hand, you can go, oh well, I can do this, or I can mess up somebody else's go, or I can get myself further forward. Yeah, I loved Sorry. Lovely design again. It's all about the look of it.
Right.
Board games are beautiful objects, and they should be.
Especially given that there is a renaissance in board game design, particularly over the last 10 years.
Yes.
Now that crowdfunding has made board games actually more feasible to produce.
So, I mean, let's continue on this vein, because I hadn't written this down, but this is something that's coming out quite a lot. So do we want to talk about, like, what makes a good game? Are we going to end up talking about what game design is? Because
let's go for it.
Let's go for it. We touched on it earlier, but let's continue. What's a good game apart from one where you have fun?
Well, a game's a simulation, isn't it? That's the thing. So even a game like Ludo is simulating a chase of some way and some kind. So I think a good game simulates something well and gives you something of the feeling of what it feels like to do that thing. So if it is, you know, killing zombies or piloting a starship or being a bunch of bugs jumping around in a bug pile, that if it simulates that well and makes you feel that thing, that's good game design to me.
And it doesn't require a lot of rules. I mean, Hungry Hungry Hippos, there is almost no like mechanics to that. But
don't get me started on the house rules for Hungry Hungry Hippos, honestly.
But it does what it sets out to do.
Absolutely.
It simulates a chaotic feeding environment very, very well.
Yeah.
It's accurate simulation of Hungry Hippos.
And yes, it is dexterity-based, and I have a general aversion to dexterity-based games, but that is me.
Yes.
But yeah, it's video games, well, either board games or video games, any kind of game, interactivity is such a powerful tool, like jumping off of what you two were saying, and I think the best kinds of games use that to their to its full extent, like use the fact that the player is directly interacting with the game to really not always say something, but to really like to poke at the player, you know. to kind of get into their head.
Yeah, and that interactivity can be manifested in a many ways. Like often it is you being able to interact with your other players in order to affect the ball game. But like there are games where you are effectively four people playing an individual game, but right. because it plays out on the board, it generates that, like, your decisions don't directly affect your opponents, but by dint of it, you, all four of you, or well, all X of you sitting around the table and the board, you create that interactivity, you create that fun environment. Like deck building games are often, I would say, things like Dominion, yes. which is a really, really good game, but generally speaking, you are making individual decisions with the shared resources that don't necessarily affect your opponent because each of you has your own deck of cards and things like that. But it creates the fun interactivity because of what comes out of that.
I see.
But, you know, all sorts of things like good cooperative mechanics. I'm a big fan of cooperative games, particularly in this day and age. And I think that if you can create a good environment for cooperation, then it also has a lot of throughputs into, you know, decision making and, you know, influences on the rest of your life and other activities. Because playing, I mean, how deep into psychology do we get here? Because play is one of the best ways to, I'm not phrasing this right, but, you know, play is so important to our development, both on a social level and on an intellectual decision-making level. Board games are so good at pushing that and helping develop those skills.
I also think what board games are often good at is helping you learn things about other people. Because I feel like you can learn a lot about someone if they're losing at a game.
And sometimes it's when they're winning.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that too.
A bad loser isn't great, but a bad winner is terrible.
Oh. Yeah. I know people who are both.
And you no longer play games with them, I assume.
No comment. but just jumping off that, like there's a whole set of games that have cropped up over the like last 15, 20 years in particular, which are termed theory of mind games. And they are definitely games that help you get to know and kind of like work better the more you know people, the better you're able to get in there. Dixit. And this is a game, like Dixit is something that we've played on RQ Gaming and Giving a couple of times. And it is a really, really good theory of mind game because it's like you particularly if you know people who are really good friends with some of the other players, you are pitching your clues to them so that you can maximize the amount of points that you're getting. And it's like Codenames is another one. Mm-hmm. And I will wax lyrical about like Codenames as a good game. Mysterium, which is the offshoot of Dixit, similarly.
So when you say theory of mind, you mean games where you're trying to guess what someone else is thinking?
Yeah, because you are looking, or you're trying to get people to buy into a certain thing, like what you're guessing or the clues that you are putting forward, you are relying on shared experiences and shared interactions by knowing somebody well enough that it's like, right, if I laid this clue down, they should know the reference, or I know that they know this reference, so they should be able to pick up what I'm putting down.
So this is making me think about how improv works.
Yes.
What do you think about that, Ian?
I mean, yeah, as an improviser, and I think I'm an improviser because I love games, because as a child I wanted to play more and more games, and then I saw that there was this intersection between performance and games playing. I think that thing that Anil is saying about the group mind of a game is so much fun that you can, you know, you can not taunt. Taunt's a terrible word, isn't it?
I mean, banter is probably the right word, but it's...
Banter's a horrific word that makes me feel ill.
That's also got horrendous connotations.
Yeah.
Friendly teasing.
Yes. And yeah, you can tease, control, maybe influence people. Gameplay. There's a great game called Skull. I don't know if anyone's played Skull.
No, what's that?
So Skull is a sort of a bluffing pokery type game where you're laying down cards, one of which might have a skull, and you're trying to tempt people into turning over the card with a skull on it.
Oh.
And it's got so much potential for getting into people's minds, getting into their heads. You know, one of my favourite things to do is to lay down a card and go, that's definitely a skull. And just look somebody in the eye with a little smile. And it, you know... If
devious.
You do, oh, evil, devious, horrible man. I don't know why I'm on here. but, you know, but it's so much fun. And again, the drama of that game, when somebody is flipping over tiles and they've said they're going to flip over 6 tiles without seeing a skull, and they get 5 flipped, and then they're choosing between one and the other. And in many ways, it doesn't matter whether it is a skull or not a skull. The reaction in that moment is, again, like improv. Improv is the only art form where the performer and the audience make the discovery in art at the same time, and the same thing happens in Skull. So it's that moment you can never recapture. You can talk about it on a podcast and it sounds dry, but if you're in the room...
No, I know what you mean.
It's thrilling.
Yeah, and that kind of groupthink is particularly what attracts me, and can be, as Ian has explained there, in terms of the mind games that you can play with people if you're trying to bluff them and such. Skull is a really good bluff. Coup is another good bluffing game.
Oh, love Coup.
And you've played Coup, haven't you, Helen?
A lot, yes.
Yeah. And we have had, another RQGG fave that has been played out on stage. Or the flip side with cooperative games, where you are talking about your actions before you enact them. Pandemic, the Betrayal at House on the Hill, all good games where you will want to talk through your actions and hopefully come to a consensus decision about how you're going to act and how the game is going to play out. And in that sense, you're driving your own narratives in much the same way as improv does.
What are your thoughts, Navy?
I don't know a ton about improv.
It doesn't have to be improv. I'm just wondering about this theory of mind thing, because you seemed... about the game design thing, because you seemed keen to...
It's really interesting. Board games are just a really interesting space for things like that. I think of... in a video game space, I think of things like Trouble in Terrorist Town or even Among Us most recently. It feels significantly easier to pull that off. It feels different in a virtual space compared to when you are directly around the table, looking someone in the eye and saying, no, actually, I'm not a werewolf, or or, you know, something, or whatever. Or it's, I'm trying to decide what point I'm trying to get to here, but it's a much different a feeling, and I totally agree with what everyone's saying, but it's a much different feeling when you actually have to sit there and look at someone while you are betraying them.
Yeah. This actually reminds me of, I don't know if any of you know about Dropout TV, which is sort of the...
Yeah.
Sort of what College Humor turned into in terms of like making video content.
Okay.
They've got a really good show called Game Changer, where it's a different kind of game every episode. Like sometimes it's improvising musical, and sometimes it's who can make the best animal noises. But there's one called, I think it's called Paranoia, in which, now they're in, I think, California, where marijuana is legal. And the aim of the game is they have about, I think, 8 people. And the host, Ali, gets 2 of them really high. And the aim is for... And then they do, like, some basic exercises, like, you know, write down all the countries that begin with P or something. And at the end of each round of the basic, like, activities, everyone has to guess who's high.
It's a really good concept.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, It's werewolf, but with weed.
Yeah, but with some people.
You see, I would probably play that more than I am willing to play werewolf these days.
It's very funny as well, because there's also I think the role is opposer, which is someone who has to act high.
Nice.
Anyway, yes, I really recommend that show. It's really funny.
It is pretty fantastic. I would also recommend it.
Yeah. Although occasionally someone does have to forfeit because they're just too high to function.
something high functioning. Yeah, let's not.
Insert your own joke.
Yes.
There. Do you know what? Actually, that's the perfect time for a break. So here are some adverts and we'll be back in a second. Hello, folks. Helen here from Rusty Quill Gaming and Enthusiasm. I'd like to tell you that the UK gaming dice company, The Dice Dungeon, have teamed up with Rusty Quill to produce two exclusive limited edition dice sets inspired by our award-winning podcast, Rusty Quill Gaming. Each set includes 7 polyhedral dice with bespoke designs inspired by the players and characters who brought RQG to life. There are 2 collector sets and a bundle with both. The We're Still Working on the Name dice are a set of 7 custom polyhedral dice featuring icons representing the player characters from Rusty Quill Gaming. They will come with a custom presentation tin. And the LOLOMG Deluxe dice are a set of 7 custom resin-filled metal polyhedral dice featuring icons representing the player characters from Rusty Quill Gaming, presented in a wooden collection box. This set will feature other exclusive, exciting extras yet to be revealed. Find out more at www.thedicedungeon.co.uk or find each dice set and a bundle collecting both sets at thedicedungeon.co.uk/collections/rusty-quill or click the link in the description of this episode. See you around and have fun. And welcome back. Okay, so we've talked about our first games and what a good game is. So with that in mind, let's talk about some favourites. Like, what are your favourite games to play? Navy, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with you.
So I really like a lot of, you know, the standards. Betrayal is one of my favourites currently. There's a game, Arena of the Gods, that I discovered through my previous job that I really enjoy playing. But currently, I think just for the amount that I play it, I have to call it my favorite. There is a board game / card game / deck builder based on the Super Hot video game.
Oh,
how does that work?
It's really interesting. So you have a board in front of you that has a bunch of like enemies and obstacles and things, and you have cards in your hand that you use to remove them from the board.
Mm.
And then cards that you remove go into your deck, cards that you play go into the computer or the enemy's deck, and then cards just move from left to right with the enemy's board. And every card has an effect. Like, there might be a card that has an effect, shoot a bullet, and you take a card from the bullet deck and you add it to the enemy deck. And there's a lot of ways that you can lose. If either decks are run out of the you lose, if you have a certain amount of bullets in your hand, you lose. It just really, like, it cycles through, and it actually plays with that concept that the game does of time moves when you do, because you decide how many cards, you know, can get cycled through every round. And it's very stressful. It can be played just by yourself. It can be played co-op or against another person. I normally just, it should just play it solitaire style.
Oh, that's neat. Because yeah. I know very few, like, board games that can be played solitaire.
Yeah, it's how I normally play. It's stressful. Oh, but it's
What's
fun.
It called?
It's just called Super Hot. Yeah, it'll have it has the, if you've ever seen the video game, it has the same cover. Yeah. And everything. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is it an officially
it's an
official time? Okay.
I don't remember who actually made it. I don't remember if the actual Super Hot developers also made this, or if they just licensed it out, but it is an unofficial product. Yeah. Or an official tie-in, I mean.
Nice. Ian, what's your favourite?
I mean, I cycle through them, honestly.
Okay.
At the moment, I'm really enjoying games that I can take to the pub because, you know, going out's a thing and I love it. So I've got some lovely little card games. There's one called Six Nimmt, which is German for take six, I think. And it can be played with up to 10 players.
Ooh.
So there's a lot of chaos in it, and it's very funny, and it's about laying down cards, and if the roll gets to six, whoever put that card down has to take all of those cards, and they're all worth negative points, and it's hilarious. I love that one.
Oh.
Yeah. And you put down a card thinking this one will be absolutely safe, and then other people have put other cards that mean that you are, you know, suddenly not as safe as you believed you were. And you're like, how did you have 35? It's lovely. And there's another one, The Crew. In fact, it's two games. There's The Crew, Quest for Planet Nine, where you're on a spaceship. The Crew Deep Sea, where you're on a underwater submarine. It is basically a trick-taking game. It's a cooperative trick-taking game.
Oh.
So there's a campaign of about 50 missions, and each mission has a different parameter that is some combination of what you do with the cards. So, like, maybe one person has to win all of the tricks, or somebody can't win a trick with a nine, or this kind of thing. But you play it without ever referring to what you have in your hand. So you're trying to do these things, and then somebody will play a card, which means suddenly the entire mission is screwed. And everybody looks at that person and goes, how dare you? And it's fantastic. It's lovely. It is a cooperative game where you can't do that thing that sometimes happens in cooperative games where people quarterback it and play the entire game. So right. I love it. I love it for that.
Yeah, which is the danger with a lot with cooperative games as a whole, the one drawback, basically.
What do you mean by quarterbacking it?
So quarterbacking is usually where there is a disparity of knowledge about the game, often when there is a new player coming into an established group, or, you know, everybody but one or two players knows how to play the game. And, you know, the, in inverted commas, received wisdom on how you play the game basically come to the fore. It's like, no, this is what we should do in order to be optimum, this, 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 and this, and you overrun other players' input.
I see. So it's like the bad kind of rules lawyer.
Yeah. Kind of thing. But yeah, it's where one person insists that they know, or one or two people, or the group think, where somebody is new, insists, this is the way we need to play. I will, like, right, on your turn, you move your piece here, I'll move my piece here, and this is the best outcome.
Yeah, I've seen people move other people's pieces for them in that kind of game. It's like, no. And
that's fine if you all agree to it, but...
Yeah. But still, that's... Yeah. Massive breach of etiquette.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hugely.
Absolutely.
So games like The Crew there's another one called Magic Maze, where everyone's playing all of the characters, but Helen, if you were playing it with us, you could only move the characters up, I could only move them down, Anil could do them left, Navy could do them right. And we're trying to get them to certain places, but we can't speak.
Oh, so, neat.
That's actually really cool.
That's hilarious.
Oh, I love it when games restrict your communication.
Oh, and I'm looking at this. It looks like the board, like, changes also.
Yeah,
like
almost,
you build it as you.
You know, it's a modular board, so every time you play it, it's a different maze you're trying to get through. Fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. Lovely. That is very happily cool. Play that.
The only communication you are allowed is there is a... big wooden sort of pole or stick, and you can grab it and rap on the table and look at the person in the eye that you're trying to get them to do something, and they're not doing it, and there's a sand timer running out. How dare they?
I think somebody brought this to the games club I used to be part of, but I didn't play it myself.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's passive aggression in a board game.
I love it. Okay, I desperately want to play that. Anil, how about you? What's one of your favourites, or the favourite?
I've mentioned Codenames. Like, I love word games, regardless of how good I am at them. because trying to do words against a timer often isn't great for me. But, you know, it's probably unsurprising that I like word games. Euro-style games is also, so worker placement ones, they're often quite complicated. So we're talking about things like Agricola and Carcassonne and things like that. But, well, Carcassonne is a bit of a hybrid game. But I would say my favourite game at the moment, like Ian, I cycle through a whole bunch. But games that like I actually own and really enjoy playing on a repeated basis, Lords of Waterdeep. It is a D&D-themed worker placement game set in the Forgotten Realms city of Waterdeep, where you play as hidden lords, and you've got to go around complete quests, and you've got limited numbers of spaces on the boards to put your pieces and your agents and things like that. It's a lot of fun, and it has a very good online implementation that I have been playing a lot over the last year or so in one of the communities I stream with. Dice Forge, really, really nice game. And you build your own dice, and you customize your own dice on the as you go through the game, which is, ooh, like, I can't underestimate how good that tactile feel is to it. Card games like Citadels, Love Letter.
Oh, Love Letter is amazing.
That sounds familiar.
And it's so simple. Like, and as Ian was talking about, games you can take down to the pub. It comes in a little velvet bag and a stack of cards and a set of cubes. And it's great. I love small box games like that you can just... Exploding Kittens is another one.
Yeah.
Although we're not really differentiating between like card games and board games here, really. But
you can put the cards on a board, it's fine.
Tabletop games.
Yeah. Dominion is one because my sister and brother-in-law have that. And that's a game that they like. Because games I can play with my family are few and far between. As much as I'm trying to get my niece, I will be getting my niece to try and play more games once she's able to grasp rules and have the patience to sit down to play things. Ticket to Ride, really simple.
I played that for the first time recently. That's really fun.
Yeah, the base USA game for Ticket to Ride, really, really good. And it's, again, one of the few games that we have been able to teach my mum to play and play as a family. It's such a good... The expansions vary. Some of the supplemental boards are a bit iffy. I don't really like the UK expansion very much. It's got some weird rules.
I played the Europe one.
Yeah, Europe is solid, but again, you've got... Yeah, the weirdness about remembering what the tunnels do is a bit, but for a straightforward game where you've got limited number of actions, but it generates a lot of fun, the basic drive. But yeah, I would say things like, I've been playing a bunch of stuff off like Board Game Arena, which has a lot of good licenses. Azul is one I was introduced to recently that I really like. It's a tile-based pattern game. Very, very sweet. It runs relatively quickly. Yeah, and then, like, the cooperative games. I haven't played enough Betrayal at the House on the Hill for it to really be a favourite, but I love the concept of it. But Pandemic...
I really want to play the Legacy version
I haven't watched people play that Legacy. I've watched Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy. Well, you know, I love Pandemic... I don't like the look of Pandemic Legacy.
Betrayal on the House of the Hill is the one where you have to figure out who the murderer is.
Not quite.
There's like a ghost?
You're four people exploring a house, and the house is built as you go. And every time something, like a significant event happens, you roll to see if the haunt occurs.
Oh.
And if the haunt occurs, then one of the four people have the potential of turning into the monster, or whatever that is. And there's a bunch of variations.
We did play it on RQGG 17. To interesting effect.
Oh, well, I wasn't there then, so...
Yeah. If we've got time about... we'll talk about traitor mechanics a bit later, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, so one player is the murderer, but you don't really... It doesn't start off
The murderer doesn't know they're the murderer until, like, halfway through the game.
Correct.
Or, indeed, how they're going to do the murders or anything like that.
Why they're the bad guy.
That's really fun.
Right, yeah, it's a thing that just happens to one of the players eventually. Aww. Or sometimes, you know... everyone is still on the same side.
Yeah.
So there are scenarios where no one is traitor.
Not often, it sounds like.
Not often.
No, but, yeah.
I have a soft spot for this very silly little game called Dobble.
Oh.
It's a little card game, and it's kind of like Snap.
Yeah.
But instead of numbers...
Remember what I said about not liking dexterity-based games?
Yeah, it would be terrible.
Dobble is one of those that hits that spot.
Yeah. So it's just, instead of numbers, there are a series of pictures on each card, and there's always at least one picture the same on every card, which... Yeah. The mathematics of figuring that out is something I cannot comprehend. But yeah, so you basically, whoever gets rid of all their cards first wins. I really like it. It's very easy and simple, and you start yelling very loudly.
Yeah. Like, it's a lot of fun. It's unfortunately not one for me. Yeah.
I played a Star Wars version and I lost mostly because I couldn't name the things. Yeah. I was like, a spaceship, another spaceship, some dude. So we're coming towards the end of the episode, but we have time for one more question. And as is often the case on this show, I'm going to go with like an advice question, which is, what do you think is the ideal first game, like first board game for someone to start with? Like, what's a good intro if, for example, someone didn't grow up with, say, Ludo or Monopoly or any of the others that we mentioned at the start?
Well, it really depends on the genre that they want to get into, right? Like, if you want to start with dungeon crawlers, there's One Deck Dungeon is one that I've always recommended to people. Just general, like, small brawl games, A King of Tokyo and Arena of the Gods is fantastic. Small World and Seven Wonders are awesome, like, more simple strategy games. There's so much to look into. It really just depends on what your play preference is.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, as Naomi said, depending on genre. But ones that I have found straightforward enough to teach to other people and get them in, particularly if they aren't gamers, Ticket to Ride. As I said, it's the one game that we have been able to teach my mum to play because it is really straightforward. The other one, there's a tile game called Alhambra, which is another good one. We've been able to teach her that. These are straightforward enough mechanics with a good amount of variation and a little bit of strategy and a little bit of player interaction that you don't necessarily have to push towards, particularly if in Ticket to Ride, like, because there are routes that you can compete on and things like that. You can have like little bits of a house rule to make it a little bit more friendly, or okay, if I know you are going in a particular area, I won't deliberately go and stop you doing that. Like, not necessarily in the rules game, but even as rules as written, it's a very straightforward game to teach people. Codenames, for anybody who likes word games, is a very, good and a very straightforward game to teach people, even if the actual nuances of it become difficult. It's like, how do I pair that word and that word? People will have seen me and Alex playing this on RQGG to varying degrees of success.
Completely opposite brains.
Yeah. And this is what we mean. And this goes back to the theory of mind thing that we were talking about earlier. Very good example of how these things work out. But again, Alhambra, Ticket to Ride, Codenames. Yeah, those would probably be Love Letter, again, would be really, really good go-to games to teach people.
Can you talk to me about Love Letter? Because it sounds familiar, but I don't actually know what it is.
So Love Letter is a roles-based a card game where you've got a deck of cards and each of the cards have a different role on it and they're numbered. So number one is the guard. Number two is the priest. One of them is a priest, one of them princess, courtesan, and king, and a prince, and things like that. And you, like, draw two cards. You decide which one you are going to play because each of them has an associated action with them. And the idea is to be the last person standing, i.e. to not have your role identified. And you then play this for various rounds. So, like, if you're forced to discard a card and you discard the princess or something like that, you automatically lose. And it's a very simple but layered game that you can get to grips with very quickly. It's played relatively quickly. And mm-hmm. you can moderate how fast you want your game to be by how many cubes you need to, how many rounds you need to win in order to be crowned the ultimate winner.
Yeah, it shares some DNA with Koo, so yeah. I think you would like it, Helen.
I think I would like it as yeah. well. Mm. Ian, what do you reckon is a good beginner game?
I mean, I'm going to refer everybody to the answers I've just been given, because they've been that basically is the starter pack of good games. I think that's been said. I would add Skull in there because Skull is fantastic.
Of course,
I love a party game, so I'm going to chuck a party game in here. My current favourite party game is called Dream Crush.
Oh,
it's not that one which has the telephone.
People think it's got the telephone. It doesn't have the telephone in. But it's very stylized 80s sort of bot-looking box. And it's a simulation of Blind Date,
the
television program.
I love Blind Date!
Oh.
You would love this. Right, so you start off with three people that everybody could date. And you all write down who you think everybody would date. And as the game goes on, you find out more and more about these people. So they might, you might find out one of them enjoys taking the dogs for a walk on the beach. That's good. That's nice. But then you might find out somebody just likes writing beat poetry and reciting it on the bus.
Not on the bus. As
you had me at the first on the bus, but then not the second.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, because of the way the cards are written, these people become more and more annoying as the game goes on. So it's not who would somebody date because they'd really like to on this date. It's which of these three people would Helen stand 5 minutes with?
Who is the least worth dateable? Wow, it really is a dating simulation.
It is. You see, there you go. And you get that feel. And it is fantastic and it's hilarious. And
what is it? Dream Crush.
Dream Crush. And the art on it is beautiful. They've got loads of different people in to pose as these Dream Crushers. I think it might have been originally kickstarted.
Mm.
And the photos are worth the entrance price alone.
Okay.
These are some horrendously, horrendously, horribly wonderful people.
Okay. The next time I have some kind of board games night, I'm gonna buy that game and I'm gonna play it. It's gonna be great.
It does sound right up your alley.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Hilarious. Oh, all right then. We're now out of time. This has been great. This has been so much fun. Thank you all so, so, so much for coming on the show and talking about board games.
Thank you. Yes,
thank you for letting us enthuse about this.
That's the aim of the show. Right. Listener, I hope you enjoyed it as well. And I will see you on the next episode. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from all of them. Would you all like to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye, bye then.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Laurie Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Michelle Snow, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.